You're listening to the Winter Interview Series on the Lawn Care Business Success Podcast, brought to you by Exmark Manufacturing. 30 years of pioneering spirit and innovation have resulted in legendary durability, all-day comfort, and unmatched cut quality. Go check them out at exmark.com. You're listening to the Lawn Care Business Success Podcast, the weekly show sharing proven methods and systems in marketing, equipment, and customer service, educational and motivational, to help make your lawn care business an overwhelming success. Now, here's your host, Julio Tomei.
Welcome, Lawn Care Nation, to another episode of the Lawn Care Business Success Podcast. I'm your host, Julio Tomei, and this is episode number 393, entitled Interview with Kevin Medeiros from K. Medeiros & Son. Well, hello, everybody, and thanks again for joining me this week on another episode of the Lawn Care Business Success Podcast. Really appreciate you guys tuning in each and every week, and of course, for those questions, the comments, and the feedback that you guys have been sending through. If you guys are interested in coming onto the podcast and sharing your lawn care business journey with Lawn Care Nation, then just hit me up. You can go to my website, lawncarebusinesssuccess.com, go to the contact page, and you can contact me there. Alternatively, if you follow me on Instagram, just send me a DM. And also in the podcast itself, if you check out the show notes, there'll be a link there where you can actually click on that and leave me a direct voicemail message. And we can figure out a good time and day to do a interview episode. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome my guest to the show, Kevin Medeiros. Hey, Kevin, how's it going?
Good, Julio. Good. Nice to meet you. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on and taking the time to come on to the show. I think this will be a very cool episode to do. I've been looking forward to chatting with you. Last week's episode, I interviewed Paul Camara, of course, and you play a big part here in his sort of transition this last year, as you are the guy that took over the majority of all those lawns that he used to maintain.
Yep. It's been good so far. I'll wait to hear his episode, but I think it's been good so far.
yeah, because of course we're recording this actually a day after I recorded the Paul's, and Paul's hasn't aired yet. By the time this one comes out, of course, that episode would have already aired. So let's just dive right into it and maybe tell us a bit about yourself and your business.
So, I was actually a mechanic, an auto mechanic by trade, and I did that most of my, adult life.
Okay.
And I just wasn't happy with being stuck indoors.
Okay.
I didn't mind the work, but just in, somewhere around 2013, my dad had a couple of, he was always in and out of landscaping, and he had a couple of yards that he was doing on the side while he was working construction. And unfortunately he got ill, so I took over his side gigs just to kind of keep him going for a while.
Okay.
And I realized, hey, I kind of like this. And I did, I was doing like five or so. And then one person saw me doing it. Hey, would you mind doing mine while you're doing it? Would you mind, and it grew. So 2000, I actually started the business, legitimately, and I left my full-time job in 2020.
Oh, wow.
So kind of it just kept snowballing, and it just kind of, it felt right. And I was home more and all of those good things.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided that's kind of where I want. And, we're really still in the beginning stages and just kind of planning things out and just seeing how we, how we like it, what we like to do, and where we fit in. But I met Paul a few years ago, and he's been a huge help. and I kind of find out where I'm going with it, you know, and he's helping me do that too. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, you can't get a better teacher or mentor or friend than Paul. You know, he's a stand-up,
not at all, right,
stand-up guy, and his work is absolutely legendary for you know, somebody that is fairly I'd say fairly green in the industry. You know, with mm-hmm. you just starting officially in 2020,
right.
You know, you had some stuff,
right?
That's you know, and to take over Paul's accounts, those are some big shoes to fill.
You're not kidding. Yeah, it was a when he offered that solution to me. So I went to work for Paul for a season. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, when I realized this is what I wanted to do, I left. I was working for the public transit, doing, you know, diesel technician there. And many people thought I was crazy. But when I decided I wanted to pursue this, I knew I needed to get out of there and knew I didn't know enough yet. So I originally went and got a job part-time a couple of days at a nursery, a local nursery, to learn more about plants and whatnot. And that also gave me a few more days to get myself closer to being, you know, where I needed to be, mm-hmm. Full time. And then at the same time, Paul reached out to me. He had lost a guy. So while I loved working at the nursery and they were great, I knew I needed to take the opportunity to go work alongside Paul and mm-hmm. the crew. And, that's kind of where everything, you know, happened. At the end of that season, he approached me and said, you know, he wanted to give up the mowing, and here I am looking for for accounts. So, you know,
yeah,
that seemed it was overwhelming at first.
Yeah,
I'm trying to wrap my head around it all, but
I
think I made the right move.
Yeah, well, and you know, I think for Paul as well, it probably was a perfect transition for him. Obviously, with his quality of work that he and mm-hmm. the standard that he maintains. That says mm-hmm. a lot about you. The fact that he is willing to hand that over, and because he's still maintaining, you know, those properties, right? In terms of the gardening and all that stuff, right? So he still, you know, feels accountable to those clients for that. So it's, that just says a lot about the quality work. Like I said, I've been doing this for 17 years mowing lawns. And I would be nervous stepping into those boots.
Yeah.
I'd be sweating every day going.
Right. I mean, my dad was pretty tough. You know, I would work alongside of him. And so Paul's right-hand man, Joe, for many years, mm-hmm. reminds me a lot like my dad. So it was kind of a natural fit for me. I kind of take to that criticism.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty well, so it kind of worked out mm-hmm. that way, and it's just that was kind of the problem I was having in the other industries where I worked, other jobs I had, was the lack of that. You know, they really it was the work was just kind of not up to par, so I couldn't be a part of those things. You mm-hmm. know, that's when I really decided, like, I can only control what I can do, so I've got to go work for myself, basically. That's kind of where I'm at, you know.
Yeah.
It feels good. It, you know, I like it so far. It's going good so far.
Yeah, that's awesome. So obviously, lawn care, as you've established now, is your main income, and taking over mm-hmm. all of those clients and stuff. What was it that you found? Like you said, you took over a couple of your dad's side gig accounts when you first started and stuff. But what was it about lawn care specifically, like once you started getting into it, that you were just like, hey, this is, you know, just kind of feels right? Because it's not for everybody. It's a lot of work you know, just the weather and stuff, whether it's bad weather like I have to deal with all the time or hot, you know, weather, or just, you know, winter weather, whatever the case, weather is a huge part of this.
Weather is a huge part. I think there's like a lot of it that I maybe didn't know right at the bat, off the bat, that I like, but I definitely realize I like being outdoors. And I think you've mentioned it before. I like the change of scenery. So mm-hmm. you go from, you know, I do have streets where I have seven or eight accounts right on that street, but it's nice to me that, like, tomorrow I'm going somewhere different most of the time than I went yesterday, or throughout the day I'm just traveling through town. And that's kind of nice. I really like that change. Mm-hmm. I was always used to being, you know, stuck in a garage, or where whatever other types of jobs I had was always kind of similar. You drove to that location to get to your job, and you were there all day. I realize that now I didn't really like that, you know. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. I'm a problem solver, and I like being, like, I'm well-rounded. I love carpentry. I love automotive, obviously. I love, and, you know, having your own lawn care business, you get to do a little bit of all of that. Mm-hmm. I do get bored if I'm just doing that one thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
All I do, I'll get bored eventually. So, I mean, I do all my own maintenance, fabrication, you name it. Mm-hmm. I try to do everything in-house. If it's feasible, you know, yeah, I know I know where I make my money. So I know sometimes it's like, okay, this makes more sense to have someone else do this for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But for the most part, I like all of that. I, you know, I just built a leaf box for the truck in the fall.
I was going to say, Paul was speaking very highly of it yesterday when I was interviewing him. I mean, he was talking about it.
Yeah, that's, so I like the opportunity that gives you, you know, where, like, if you, you know, I'm assuming if you open up an office job, if I had my own business, but it was an office job, it wouldn't give, you know, I'd be stuck in the office and it wouldn't give me the opportunity to get to do all the other things too. So that's some of the reason why I think I was like, you know, I really liked it. And I like the fact that, it's up to you, really. I'm noticing that now. I mean, it's tough with employees and whatnot, trying to get employees or move up to, you know, kind of grow. I've noticed that's tough, but getting to work isn't really that hard.
No.
And it seems that, like, it's your own limit, you know,
yeah.
If you want to do more, I think, you know, again, it's just new to me, but I think it's like, the more you want to do, just the more you can do, just keep going, you know, mm-hmm. the sky's the limit, so to speak.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I like that. It's not dependent upon anyone else. It's only dependent upon me as far as I want to go with it. You know,
that. Yeah. It's absolutely, the definition of a self-made man.
there's no
excuses.
You sink or swim.
Yeah.
Right. There is no excuses. Yeah. I mean, if I sink, it's on me, but if you swim, it's also on you.
So, yeah. Yeah, and you start to do things like, for me, you know, lots of days and things like that. I don't even, you know, have lunch or stop for lunch. It's just like, you know, it's because it's like I'd rather work through the day and get done sooner than stop for a break in the middle or whatever the case may be.
Right.
So it's, you know, you just have that full control, that full whatever you want to do, anytime you want to do it. It's very difficult. You know, I talk to, you know, as I get older and you get the aches and pains and things creeping up and stuff like that. And, mm-hmm. you know, my wife has mentioned, oh, you know, maybe you should think about doing something different, you know, going back to getting a job or something like that. Right. And I'm like, there is no way after, you know, 17 years of being on my own, working for myself, there's no way I could work for somebody else. It would be
right.
Yeah. There's like, yeah, that's not an option.
Yeah. I have had another business in the early 2000s, and I had a partner, and it was not in the industry. But same, you know, I got that. I'm getting that same feeling I did at that time, where, like, you know, like you said, you'd be hard to go work for someone else again. I do think about, okay, what's you know, just newly getting into it, but I do think about what's the long term goal here, mm-hmm. You know. In my 60s, do I still want to be doing this? Will I be able to do it? Mm-hmm. You know, do you just become a manager? I kind of, you know, I'll wait and see that and see how it all goes. I don't know the answer to any of that. I mean, Paul's guys there, John and Joe. I mean, Joe is in his 60s and John is in his late 50s, and they will work you under the table.
Yeah, so yeah.
If I am, you know, blessed with their energy and health, then it wouldn't be a problem, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Joe is a funny
we'll
one
because
he retired, quote unquote, and then you see him on the Instagram post. He's still coming out.
I don't think he's ever going to be the guy that's going to just sit down and watch everyone else do it.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, I think just a completely different type of person, right? That they just can't, retirement just doesn't fit for that type of a person, right? So that's awesome. So do you currently have any employees? Are you just by yourself? And
I am by myself. I did try out a few people over the year.
Okay.
You know, some were great. Some not so much. I didn't have it in particular that was bad or anything. But like you said, you know, we are doing my properties are a little bit more, you know, the quality has to be there.
Yeah.
And trying to get that across to the employee in a nice way, been difficult. You know, in the end, my explanation to them all the time was, in the end, the outcome still needs to be there. Whether I do it or you do it, you know, this is the expectation of the customer they're expecting of us and that we're charging for. So that would become difficult throughout the season. So I haven't found that exact person yet. You know, I'm hoping to. I would like one person, maybe two. I'd love like a right hand man.
Yeah,
but we'll see how it goes. You know, now I've been managing as it is, but definitely could find someone. That's what I've been doing. last like off time. Yeah, trying to really find that person.
Yeah,
it's tough. I'm sure you could. You know about that, and it's tough just trying to find the right person that would fit.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Paul was mentioning when I was interviewing him yesterday, and those that listened to the episode would have heard this. He was talking about how, I think it was Joe, when Paul was younger and kind of coming up in the business and stuff like that, was saying that, I believe it was Joe, but it might have might have been somebody else, but either way, they were saying like he's getting to a job, and he was doing it, and then it was getting kind of late in the day, and he was trying to wrap things up to get home, and I think Joe came up to him and said, "We finished the job the way we started the job." He says, in the beginning, in the morning, we're all about the quality and all that stuff. And then, now you're trying to rush and get this done to get home. He says, that's not how we do it. We finish the way we start, right? And this is when he was young and, coming and learning. Mm-hmm. So he learned those lessons, and that's what's carried him through. So it's interesting for you to say that, right, with the employees and finding that person that understands that is the that high level of expectation on these properties that needs to be carried through.
I mean, I want that level, I'd want that level myself anyway. It's not just that the customer is expecting it, but I like I like the trailer to be organized. I like the equipment to be taken care of, maintained, but also while you're using it, I don't want someone abusing the mowers and whatnot. I always wondered what these bigger guys, bigger companies, and they've got all these employees. It would drive me nuts because I'm not sure I could handle knowing what they're out there doing to my equipment, but yeah, I would want that quality myself as well, out of my employee. But I also want to make sure that employee is having, I want it to be fun. I want them to like working with me. And we do have fun. I did have a 15-year-old kid. He's 16 now. He's great. I have a feeling that he's gonna do well on himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he's pretty good. And I had him here and there. He when school was out, he'd help me. I've had older guys, and he'd have to show them what's up. He was more into it. He loves the industry. So it helps where if I hire people that really didn't care about the industry, it's, they don't, they're not in for, you know, they're just in there for a paycheck, which is okay, but you know.
Yeah. No,
so that's tough. I think that's tough too, just in the fact that, you know, obviously there is a budget that you've got to keep, and, and there's jobs everywhere right now where they're paying,
big money for
work at McDonald's.
Right.
So, how do you incentivize them to come work for you and work hard and all that good stuff?
So it has to be, it has to be that kind of person that really enjoys that outdoor and that change of pace, similar mindset, right? Or somebody that has bigger ambitions maybe for the future of doing that themselves at some point and wants that training on the job sort of experience and stuff.
I would love, you know, if there was like a 4-year turnaround or a 3-year turnaround and I had someone for 3 years and I showed them the ropes and they went on and did their own thing, that would be perfectly fine with me. I'd love it. And then like, you know, you recycle, recycle that and do it every 3 years or 4 years or what have you. That's okay with me. I wouldn't be intimidated of, he's leaving me to start his own or anything like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of what happened with me. So I'd love to like pass that on to someone else and give them that next opportunity.
That's awesome.
But I'm not sure where I don't know where that leads us yet. We'll wait and see.
So tell me a bit about the K. Medeiros and Son. How did the name come about?
My son was born in 2016, so he's only six.
Yeah.
So he may be my employee sooner than later.
Yeah.
But no, I just kind of went with it. That's a pretty popular name for company construction, landscaping, anything like that around here. And I just kind of went with it. I originally had just wrote my last name down, and it's a pretty popular last name around here.
Yeah.
So I threw the K in, and then I said, "Oh, gee, I might as well throw the and son." And but he's when he's of age, he can do whatever he wants.
It's
more of a funny thing.
Okay.
When we send out our Christmas cards, he's on there pushing them over or whatever.
Yeah. That's cool. I didn't know if it was maybe something to do with your dad, like his name, and it was you were the son or
No. People have asked. No, it wasn't. My father passed away in 2015.
Okay,
so he didn't get to see me start it all up. But it is, having the family name there, it is a little of an homage to him, kind of. And I do have some of his original customers. I mean, obviously I have a lot more customers now, but I've gotten calls from, many calls to go do work on properties or give a quote where I get there and they're like, wait a minute, was your dad here? Did your dad used to do work for us? So that's kind of nice.
That's cool. especially with your son growing up, you never know what the future holds. But it's funny. I have a client that I picked up this last year for lawn mowing. And he has a lot of other services that come, like house cleaners and a pool guy and stuff like that. And he's very loyal to his service people, like whoever he hires. He was telling me about some guy came and was doing one day resealing his driveway. And the guy had done like crack repairs and stuff on this driveway like 7 years ago and has come back every year to reseal it and stuff. And then he was talking about the pool guy and how the pool guy, the current pool guy, has been servicing his pool for 20 something years. And before that, it was his dad. And just recently, the last two visits, it was his son. So it's been three generations of father, son, grandson who have now taken over this pool and doing pool maintenance. So wouldn't it be neat, like if one day in the future your son were to take over and he's taking
I'd love it.
Properties that his grandfather originally was doing?
Right.
Yeah, that would be so cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love it. I always do, my wife and I talk and I said, I won't force him to do anything, and I'll be interested in whatever he does, of course. But that would be really neat. I mean, that would be nice. Keep it going.
Definitely. Cool. Very cool. So this next question is one that I love asking business owners, because when I do, I always get a different answer. But if I ask somebody who works a 9-to-5 job or shift work, an employee, their answer typically is the same. So, Kevin, for you, how would you define success?
Oh, geez. For me, it was just, I'm pretty simple. Just a comfortable living. I don't have to be rich. You know, the family doesn't have to be rich. Mm-hmm. If I can give my family a good life. And I think the whole reason, one of the biggest reasons I did this was to spend more time at home and can control that time.
Yeah.
That's huge for me, is like family time, being home with my family, and kind of like living a more simple life. Mm-hmm. Around the house and even with our extended family and stuff. And then if at the end of my career, if I can leave something, the business or, you know, a house or whatever to my son, mm-hmm. you know, that's a big plus on top of that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's awesome.
I'm not a big fancy person, a lot of fancy things.
So. No, I think you've got, a solid head on your shoulders. It's interesting. I always see when you go to like the, the poorest areas of different countries and poor countries, how they're always happy. And they have the least amount of stuff, right? And then you go to like some of the richest people and they're miserable. And I think it's just that like priorities of putting value in the wrong things, putting value mm-hmm. in that fancy stuff that doesn't really matter. Staying grounded and true to your family and the loved ones around you is where you find that true happiness that happens. So that's cool to hear that you're pretty much right on that track. Besides the properties, like how many properties did you take over for Paul, and how many did you have before that in terms of like other style properties? Are they the same, like the ones you originally had, were they of that caliber or are they,
No, I mean, a couple were pretty nice. Nothing that large.
Okay.
So the ones I took over from Paul there's one that's probably like 3 acres or so.
Okay.
Another is probably 2. They're 2, if you can imagine, they're, you see the pictures, they're 2 or 3 acres of really nice lawn, mm-hmm. And gardens, a lot of, trimming and edging, luckily he's doing the bed maintenance on that and all the plant maintenance.
Yeah.
So I took over, I believe, 7
okay.
of those.
Nice.
A good portion of that is all one family. I think I'm somewhere around 35 to 37 customers right now, because those bigger properties do take up, I might do 3 or 4
yeah.
in that day. So I try to do most of the mowing, most of the residential mowing towards the end of the week. And I do have some commercial properties, and they get done in the beginning of the week.
Okay. Yeah.
And I leave myself, I don't do just strictly mowing. I do strictly mowing on those properties that I took from Paul. Right.
Yeah.
So I do have to leave myself time for mulch jobs, trimming, all of the other things on my other properties. So mostly that's mostly done during the week, in the middle of the week, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. I think I have about 35 or so. We did pick up 2 more this year.
Yeah.
So,
I always say, the numbers can be deceiving with that.
Right.
Like I get people asking me all the time, like through DMs, like some up and coming like kid or something will DM me and say, how many clients do you maintain? Right. And right. I know what they're thinking when they're asking that question. And, I always respond with, you're asking the wrong question. It doesn't matter the number. What matters is the quantity and the profitability of those.
Right.
Because you can have a highly successful and highly profitable company with 20 clients if they're the right types, right? Like those, originally when Paul was maintaining all of those and doing all of that, that was a lot of work and, to do. And he doesn't have hundreds of clients. He had a select few that he was picking to do. So yeah, it's one of those things I see all the time, and people think that success means hundreds of clients and stuff like that. And it's like, nope, it doesn't. That can be success if that's your, you know, if the quality isn't, you know, the goal, and it's just in and out and quick and fast and all that sort of stuff. It depends on what your business is, what you're aiming to be.
Right. I'd say like a majority of my customers, you know, they're half acre, three quarter acre lots.
Nice.
But I try to add value to my customers call me for everything. Mm-hmm. And I like that, you know, I try to add, I'm kind of like almost like a rent-a-son to a lot of my customers.
Yeah,
most
yeah.
of them are older, you know, close to retirement or almost retired, that age. So in, you know, in the fall, the end of the season, you know, I'll do their gutter cleaning and all the things that kind of go along with just like, I mean, I won't paint your house or anything like that, but they'll call me, or they'll call me to help them find someone who will do those other things. And mm-hmm. I just like, I like sort of being that, that point of contact for them, where they're comfortable with me. So I'm getting better at, charging for those services, as far as like, you know, I was always in the beginning, I was charging too much. And now I'm learning more about my value to that customer. And I've actually I've yet to advertise for anything or,
nice.
So yeah, it's all word of mouth. So I have to remind myself occasionally, like, hey, they're calling me. and most of the time they're calling me because they saw me do some work at someone else's house.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not looking to get rich off of an individual customer, but I know where I've got to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of times, if I do take on a new customer, I have done it in the past where like a year before last, I took on a new customer and my initial price, for just like regular mowing was double than what they were paying.
Mm-hmm.
And they just took a chance on me.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
explained to them why it was. And they've been, you know, extremely happy with me, and I don't foresee them going anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Since then.
Yeah, yeah. I have a
but it's the value. I think you've got to like,
yeah.
you really have to, if you're going to charge that extra, you know, price, you're going to have to show them why they're choosing you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a similar one that I picked up a few years ago that was like that. And they called and I got there and the grass was like a foot tall, and mm-hmm. they were actually recommended to call me from their quote unquote, like the current provider that they had who left them
right.
in a lurch.
right.
And, you know, when I quoted them, I gave them a price and I think it was like $20 or $30 more than what they were mm-hmm. being charged. And they were just like kind of shocked by that. And, they're like, why is it so much? I said, well, cause that's like the true cost of what it's going to cost me to do this. And thing
right.
I said, well, you know, where's your, you may have been paying less with your current guy, but look what you've got. You've got foot tall grass cause he hasn't been able to come to it. And I guarantee you it's because he's not making any money on this. So
exactly. Cause if he was, he'd be there.
Yeah. He's pushing it aside. Right. And now he's right. finally right. calling you and telling you he can't he can't handle it. Or he's letting you go or whatever. Right. So it's like, it's one of those things. And you know, once they kind of wrap their head around that and, you know, took a chance on me as well. It's been, I think, 3 or 4 seasons now, and they're,
great.
You know, super pleased with it, right? Because I'm reliable,
yeah.
they're rain or shine, I'm, you know, always there, they don't have to worry about it, and it's always taken care of, so, yeah, so it's, yeah, I can totally get where you're coming from with that,
right.
and knowing your value, right? Because it's similar for me, I don't advertise, I don't do that, so when people are calling, it's usually because of word of mouth, and the hardest for me is when it's a good client, and they're asking if I can service a family member, but the family mm-hmm. member, my roots are so tight and their family member might not be in the area. And it's like, sorry, like love to help
right,
them out,
right.
but I'm not going,
yeah.
you know, out that far or whatever.
I do have some people that like, you know, that's tough because you'd want to recommend someone, but
yeah.
then you don't know, you know, now even just by recommending that person, you're kind of tied to it. You know, you've given that client, your recommendation, basically,
yeah.
if that person doesn't turn out to be as good as you'd hope, it's kind of like your name on there. So even that, I'm really, I try not to with like I don't do any fertilizing.
Oh.
So I do have a few people where I recommend mm-hmm. fertilizing to, that hasn't always worked out great for me.
Yeah.
And usually I'll, you know, cause I won't take on a property that's not, fertilized. So like one of my little checkpoints, so to speak, is, you know, do you water your grass? Do you have an irrigation system of some sort? And is it regularly fertilized? So I kind of want to vet the customer. Are they really into their property?
Yeah.
So if they say no, but we want to get a fertilizer guy, then I'll recommend. I've got a few people that I would recommend. And now I've gotten it narrowed down to who I would recommend.
Okay.
I've had some growing pains with that where I would recommend some money and they would go there and the results just didn't match, you know, what we expected. So,
Yeah. I rarely do the same if a customer's asking me for, if I know anybody or something, I will typically shy away and just say, you know, I would just Google, you know, search, do your due diligence stuff, because I don't want
to. Right.
Yeah, because they, you know, if you're recommending, they're going to kind of skip all that and just call the person and kind of rely on the fact that you told them that. And if it goes sideways, then it's not good. And that leads me back to the beginning where I said, it says a lot about you that Paul picked you to take those clients, knowing his standard of work and stuff. It says a lot about you and that quality of work that you brought to the table and your just enthusiasm to learn and all that sort of stuff to hold that high standard yourself.
Obviously, when you work for yourself, ultimately you're working for the customer, so you are still working for someone. But even when I'm on those properties now, it's I am working, you know, that is my customer. I do build a customer, but I still have that, like, it's nice to have that second, you know, so you work for yourself, you're working for the customer. It's kind of nice to have that second or third where I'm like, I know I've got to keep up that my end of the bargain with Paul, as far as that goes, as far as keeping that the quality and stuff. Like you were saying about, you know, finishing the job.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a reminder. It's just a reminder of why you're on this property, you know, that you're there for that. Someone chose you to be there. It's nice, tumbling, but you also get that little reminder that, hey, keep up that work that got you this job to begin with, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I like it. I mean, it can be nerve-wracking, you know, making sure, especially like I said, when I had, you know, I know the work that I can do. When you have someone working for you and the properties are big and they're on the other side of the yard and whatnot, you know, that gets a little bit more nerve-wracking. That are they understanding, you know, what you really want done? Is it getting done? But that's all, I guess that's all part of the game, you know?
Yeah. It's all, yeah, that and building that trust and learning that employee and a part of it, I guess, is, letting go of a little bit of control, which for me is like pulling teeth. Like I need to have control.
Yes. I'm probably very same here. It, man, that's tough, you know? I think if I find the right person, you'll know. I'm hoping it's like, you know, you get a sign from above or something that says, this is the guy.
Yeah. That's funny. So this next question is probably one that gives people the hardest, or like not the hardest, but they got to take a moment to think about their answer. So I'm going to ask it, but then I'm going to go to a commercial break and then we'll come back and get your answer. So the question is, share with us a time you struggled in your business and what you learned or did to overcome it. So I'll give you a moment to think about that and we'll just take a break and we'll come back right after this. So stay tuned.
Hey, Lenny Magnol here. As a product manager at Exmark, I'm focused on innovations that keep your mowers up and running, so they'll be ready to roll whenever there's grass to be cut. Our new Tractus airless drive tires maximize the productivity and uptime performance of our Laser Z mowers. When combined with our semi-pneumatic front caster tires, Tractus eliminates flat tire-related downtime. When you've had enough of productivity-killing flat tires, it's time for Tractus. Learn more at xmark.com.
Okay, Kevin, so tell us about a time you struggled in your business and what you learned or did to overcome it.
All right, so probably the worst for me so far was actually the beginning of this year, early spring, with COVID and everything. finding equipment was really, I spent all last winter trying to find, so I was looking for a center discharge mower, a walker or a navigator.
Yep.
And that was getting like, time was ticking and there was nothing out there, new, used, or, you know, I was on waiting lists. And at the same time, I was trying to buy a truck, a newer pickup truck. So yep. I do have two pickup trucks. That's what I run in my business. So I was running all, you know, I drove 800 miles one day looking for a truck that was not completely rotted or that was, you know, good value.
Yeah,
that was obviously with the whole used car crisis. That was, so that was a really tough, man, like month for me. I ended up buying a brand new, Skag. I think it was a Skag Liberty.
Okay.
And not what I needed. It's just what was available because it had a bagging system. And I kept that for, I only put like 100 hours on it, until my name moved up on the waiting list for, I ended up buying a Navigator. But it seemed like everything kind of hit all in one week. My first cleanup of the year, we were at a property and, I noticed that the trailer hitch on my older truck had a crack in it. And, I'm getting better at not like freaking out. So I was like, oh, no big deal. I can weld, I can fabricate stuff. So when we get home, it looked all right. When we get home, I'll repair it. So when I got home, and this is the first day of the my kickoff season, and I got home and I go to repair the trailer hitch, and it is just completely rotted, gone. So I had a full day lined up for the next day of work, and I still haven't found a second truck yet. So that was really nerve-wracking. So I moved things around. My wife is great, and she sent she went out and got the trailer hitch. One day for me, she picked the trailer hitch up and we moved. Basically, I moved the schedule around. So that day I didn't need to tow the trailer. I brought what I needed for the one property. And in the end, you know, it wasn't a big deal, but, learning that, like to try and do that, know that at the time, that's probably, something that I'm getting much better at, but, you know, not freaking out, just kind of taking things as they go. I ended up buying a truck. I did end up getting the mowers that I wanted. But it's just, sometimes it feels like everything hits you all at once.
Yeah.
And, you know, as much as I we want to do a good job for the clients, as much as we're on these nice properties and everything, at the end of the day, I have to sometimes remind myself like, hey, we're just mowing lawn. We're just trimming bushes, you know?
Yeah.
Something happens, people will understand, you'll get it figured out and move on.
It's not,
but yeah, that was
it's not open heart like, surgery or anything.
right But that was a good like welcome to the show. It was maybe 3 or 4 days. I mean, it was months of trying to find equipment. That's all I did. I mean, last winter was just driving everywhere, trying to find equipment. I'd go see it and it was horrible, or, you know, they wanted twice what it was new and all of that stuff. It was a nightmare. I had, because prior to last year, I was using V-Rods, Skag V-Rods. And I bagged all my lawns, my bigger lawn, probably the biggest lawn I had to, 2 acre.
Yeah.
So that mower was like, I was pushing it as far as I had a side bagger on it. So it's taking me a long time to bag that. And I knew picking up other lawns that wasn't going to work out for me.
Yeah.
So I was getting pretty nervous, but, it all worked out in the end.
Yeah. How's the Navigator working out for you?
I love it. I did a lot of, which I'm sure you did. I watched a lot of your videos actually comparing Navigator to Walker, and back and forth. And Paul has Walkers.
Yep.
A couple other friends of mine have Walkers. So it was like, I think I would have been okay either way I went.
Yep.
I think Walker makes a great machine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'll ever have like a good, you know, a phase with me. I do think though, looking at both of them now, if you are going to have employees, especially if there's going to be some turnover, I think the Navigator is the way to go because it's just stout. I mean, it's just built. I do have I still have my dad's old X-Mark walk behind a Metro.
Nice.
And I always liked that machine too. And it's you know, they're built tough. I like my Skags. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. Skags were great. But I do like the Navigator's deck is really, really, you know, really stout. And it's been great. I think I've got 200-300 hours on it now. Just nice. Like basically second half of the season with it. And yeah, it's been pretty good.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, they're definitely, they're, yep. I think I summed up owning both of them over the years. Basically, yep. I think the deck, at least if you're gonna rely on one deck only, the Navigator, mm-hmm. I think, takes the cake. Just being a deeper mm-hmm. deck, it seems to vacuum a lot better. From what I remember with the Walker, it would get clogged in like wetter conditions and stuff where I'm always in mm-hmm. wet conditions. But the build, like you said, it's just like I right with you in terms of like if you have a company that has like lots of employees and stuff, then the Navigator is the way to go. If you have a need for all of the accessories and different deck sizes and all that stuff, then the Walker is the way to go.
I wish X-Mark, I wish they did have a little bit more of that, you know.
Yeah.
That platform, maybe as it gets even more popular, they'll start manufacturing, I hope. it's been great.
Yeah, they're nice machines for sure. And that pandemic, like you mentioned, that was pretty crazy. It took, I think, originally I was, first thinking about the Navigator and kind of ironed things out in... might have been even like October of 1 year, and the Navigator didn't actually arrive until August the next year.
Wow.
Because of the pandemic and shortages and all that sort of stuff, right? Yeah, it was pretty crazy that whole time period with the supply and demand and stuff like that, and just a lot of it was just parts being stuck on container ships and docks not being able to unload stuff for months and months because of no employees and things.
I mean, it kind of worked out for me because so I ended up selling all my, I had two Skags. I said I had the new Liberty, which that one I knew I was going to kind of take a hit on because it was a more of a homeowner model. I mean, I did have it optioned out pretty well. But I had my V-Ride, and V-Rides around here are pretty popular, or the Wright Standards are really popular. So my V-Ride had over 1,000 hours on it, and which is not a lot. And I sold that I think I bought that brand new in 2016 and 17. And I sold that for only like $1,000 less than I bought it
for. Nice.
So, so that was great. I mean, because the market was hot for used equipment. So it was tough for me to buy used equipment, but it was easy for me to sell used equipment. So kind of give and take on that. X-Mark, I did end up doing the, I got the X-Mark 30 as well as part of the package.
Oh, nice.
So that worked. Yeah, that worked out great. So
That's another great
I do like that. I know you love that mower. It took us some time to get used to it. It took me some time to get used to it, and any of the guys I had using it, they weren't real receptive of it at first. You kind of got to get a rhythm of like how to spin that thing around. But I think it as far as like small walk behind push mowers, I think it cuts really, really well. It really does a good job at mowing the lawn.
Yeah, it does fantastic. I love it for like leaf cleanups too. I blow everything onto the lawn and then I just mow it like normal. And, you know, so it'll take maybe two passes or whatever. Like I'll mow the lawn once and then, you know, I'll go over it again a second time just to pick up any bits it missed and stuff. But man, it's phenomenal. And it just mulches everything with those like Gator Blades it has. It's bagging, but it's like, mulching everything up, so it packs the bag really tight,
right.
And it actually takes a lot in there, right? It's been a great little a mower as well. It's funny, every time I hear complaints from people about it, it always tends to be with the sentence of "my guys don't like it," and it's like, yeah, because they're employees, they don't want to be, they'd rather have the super lightweight mower and stuff because it's not on them, but as a business owner, the productivity is like
I do wish they had either some kind of locking casting wheels or some kind of rear differential, because we do have a couple of properties where the beds are curved, and going around a curved bed, you kind of have to take the weight off of the front a little bit of it, and that can be a little challenging. For that, I do run some Honda mowers as well, small 21 Honda mowers. We've had Honda mowers at my house since I was a kid, I think I'll always have a Honda mower around somewhere. I do run those.
Yeah.
That 30 basically, when I sold the V-Ride was at 36. So I was worried about gated back gates.
Oh, okay.
But that 30, it honestly doesn't take that, that much longer than I would have. And I only have a few that need that 30 in the back gates.
It's
pretty productive and it works out pretty good. I try to keep a small trailer. I do have an enclosed trailer that we keep everything in, but I try to kind of keep everything compact and neat and tight. So it all works out great inside that trailer.
Yeah. For me, I do a lot of small properties, and there'd be times where I had the Star stand-on mower as well, the little 32. But there would be times where, there might be one step or something to get to the backyard. So it was like, okay, I can't put the Staris back there. So I'm going to have to use the 30, right? And then it was like, okay, so do I use the Staris on this front lawn, or do I just use the 30 for both? Because of the way my trailer is, the 30 is on the side, sort of side compartment where my trimmer and stuff is anyways. And the stuff in there fits nice and doesn't have to be locked or clamped when it's all in there. So I can just open the door, reach in, grab something, pull it out and stuff. Where in the back, when I carry any bigger mower, stand on, anything like that, it has to be all strapped down and all that sort of stuff, right? So it's like, it's not even worth the time to sit and unstrap. I've got the door open anyways because I'm putting the trimmer back, pull out the 30, and just do the whole thing, right? It's just like, and it just ends up just being more productive for me that way than unloading a big mower, because the properties are smaller, right? So it's one of those things.
I love the rhythm of that. Once you figured that out, you're getting that rhythm of that was one thing. So towards the end of the year, my last employee was working out really well. Unfortunately, he's going to school next year or this season coming up, so I won't have him. But that's one of the things where we were getting such a rhythm, and I love that. And, working with Paul and his guys, it was, that was something I saw that it's addicting. These guys would just get to work. I mean, they're having fun. And everyone knows their job. I'm the type of person where in the trailer, I want everything neat and it's purposeful.
Yep.
So it's got to make sense. Obviously the tools you use daily have to be, at hand's reach, but I'm also, if someone's working with me and they're going to work with me, and they see something better, they want to move it. Hey, should we move this over here? Or can we bring this with us next time or whatever? I love that. So that worked out well with some of my employees. Some things that, some of the guys that I worked out that worked with me, even if they didn't stay, but I did keep their, if they gave me an idea or a tip, hey, it's going to work out. I'll take it,
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's those little things that can really streamline and make a huge difference. It's one of the things that I like, I tell the story all the time about how I switched to use from my small properties, how I switched from using a backpack blower to a handheld blower. And it was out of necessity because my trailer got stolen and all my equipment was gone and I needed to just get some stuff together to be able to continue the properties while I was waiting for insurance to pay out. And I went to the dealer, bought a steel combi system because I could do trimming and edging and stuff with it. And then got a handheld steel blower because I had one of those like shredder vac ones previously as well that was on the trailer. So I thought, okay, I'll just use that because I can I can do if I need to vacuum anything like rock beds and stuff like that. But then I can just use it to handheld blow until I get a backpack blower and stuff. And so I was forced to use this handheld blower after using a backpack blower for 5 years. And I found that, the way my trailer is set up with that weird side door compartment for tools, I literally have to open the door, drop it on the ground. I have to pull out the backpack blower, set it on the ground. I then close my door, lock it. I go and put my foot on the blower, prime it, start it. Then I got to put it on my back and go start blowing. And then the reverse, when I come back, is all the same reverse steps. With the handheld blower, I found, I can unlock it. I don't have to open the door fully. I can just hold the door open with one hand, reach in, grab the blower with the other hand, set it on my fender beside me. I don't have to bend all the way down to the ground. I can close the door, lock it. Then I can grab the blower and start walking and starting it as I'm walking. And I was like, this is like so efficient. And for the small properties, I'm just blowing grass clippings off of sidewalks and stuff. And 12 years later, I'm still using a handheld blower for all season except for the leaf cleanups at the end of the season, right? And I was like, that just made so much. It's so much more efficient for me with my particular setup. Like you said, you just love that rhythm that you get into. You find those little tweaks that you can make. That's like, that's so, why didn't I think about this sooner sort of thing, right? So much quicker.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, I love, like I said, I like that rhythm of it and you feel good about doing it, that kind of repetitiveness of it. Cause you get better at it each time too, because you're doing the same thing over and over. And then, also if you do change something and it gets even better, I like that. I'm not married to any one way of doing something. So I love the feeling of like, wow, we just improved. I was doing it. Like you said, you're doing something for so long that same way, but when you improve on it, it's nice. You get to see, the result right away.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a whole nother, like what we were talking about earlier, that's another reason of why, like, working for yourself and kind of being able to make those judgment calls on your own is another benefit. There's no red tape to cut as far as, hey, can we, I've worked for corporations or bigger companies, and you want to do something, and it's like an act of Congress to try and so it's nice to be able to kind of do that on the fly.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes it's the funniest little things. I remember one time, like I say, for like many, many years, I always put my gas cans, jerry cans, stuff in the back of the truck. Like when you open the truck, behind the rear wheels, they've got that little notch where you can have like a 2x4. Right. So I have a 2x4 there, and I keep my jerry cans between the 2x4 and the tailgate. And for years, I would sit there and they would slide around or whatever. And I'd try to put a bungee cord around the hooks and stuff. But then the bungee cords would always pop off or get lost, at the end of the day or whatever the case may be. And I remember watching a video once. And it was like Kevin from Fall River Lawn Care. Yep. And he opened his trailer and he had the same, like those basic black bungee cords, the rubber ones. And he had the one end going through the hook, and he had bent the hook so that the bungee cord is like permanent and doesn't come off. And I was like, why have I never thought about that? Like, so I immediately went out there, grabbed the bungee hook, hooked it to that hook on the corner of the truck bed, grabbed some pliers, bent it, and it's still there to this day. And I remember I immediately texted Kevin. I'm like, dude, just like after all these years of doing this, I just watched your video, just happened to see that in the background. And that was like so much value to me, seeing that you bent the hook on the bungee cord so that it doesn't get lost. It just always sits there.
Right.
And you just got to hook the other end around and then hook it to the thing. And it's always there. It's always ready to go.
And it really is. I mean, it was a free thing. It really is the simple stuff. I mean, the way my trailer set up, I didn't buy any, and it's not a knock on any of those equipment, Defender or any of those brands, but I just make all of the stuff, and all of my equipment you know, the trailer itself locks, but all the equipment also locks. Mm-hmm. But I just make it out of whatever I have around the house or fabricate something. And it works out pretty well. And you can, you know, if I come up with a better idea, you can fix it. You know, you can change it because you didn't just buy this product that, you know. But I do the same thing. I with the bungees, because each blower hooks on a locking hook that I made, but to keep them all kind of secure up against the wall, so without swinging and so they don't wear themselves out, they do get bungeed. Similar to what you said, I have the bungees like screwed right to the side of the trailer on one end, of course, and it works out pretty well that way. You don't lose the bungee either.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, absolutely.
But it's those little things. I always say I want someone to get in the trailer that's never worked with me, and I want them to be able to get in that trailer and figure out where things are like the minute they get in. Mm-hmm. If they can do that, then I've done it right. You know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like yeah, absolutely. I think we're very, very similar in terms of that and sort of that skill set of, you know, kind of make your own stuff and fabricate your own things. I'm very similar with that, like my trailer doors that I designed and built. Mm-hmm. Like back in 2007, 2008, I used to do snow removal as well, but I would do like the sidewalks mm-hmm. with snow blowers and stuff. And when mm-hmm. I first started, I just, you know, loaded up a snow blower in the trailer and would take that around. It took me like one winter to go, okay, this is not going to happen again. I am not driving a trailer in the wintertime. Like I was driving, turn a corner and the trailer would be fishtailing, you know, almost beside me. Like, I'm like, what the heck? Like, this is so dangerous. It's so icy out here and stuff at times. Like the trailer cannot, you know, when you're turning corners and stuff, it's just sliding all around. So I was like, there's gotta be a better way. So I started racking my mind going like, what am I going to do? The snowblower is just way too big and heavy to get into the back of the truck, and ramps are going to be sketchy on the mm-hmm. on the back of the bed when it's icy and slippery and stuff.
Right.
So then I thought, well, you know, I'd seen those like mobility scooter racks that go into the back of, you know, the trailer hitch and stuff.
Right.
But they were all small. Like there was nothing mm-hmm. on the market that would fit a snowblower. So I was like, mm-hmm. well, you know, I'm just going to make a big beefy version of that. And so I did. I like got some expanded gate and some angle iron and built it and took mm-hmm. it to a powder coater, and they powder coated it and put that on the truck, and it was like super beefy version that fit the snowblower perfectly. And it's funny, this is back in like 2007. Mm-hmm. And nobody was doing that. And now I look on like social media, everybody's doing that.
Right.
Like you see that all the time now, people using, and you can buy those racks now in all different sizes, where back then you couldn't. They were very narrow and stuff. You couldn't fit a snowblower on them. And now like they come in all mm-hmm. different sizes, and everybody does that. Everybody throws snowblowers on the back.
Yeah, they're convenient.
Yeah, they're very, very thing, right? But I was like, man, like that was back in the day. I should have patented that or something.
What's the saying? Necessity is the mother of invention,
Along
those lines.
Yeah, it's one of those things, right? So, yeah, that's very cool. So one of the most common questions that I get in my business, or if I meet somebody, you know, not pertaining to business, like if I'm just, you know, a social mm-hmm. event or something like that, and they find out what I do for a living, their first question almost always is, so what do you do in the wintertime? So if you have a winter or off season, then what is it that you do in the winter?
So that's a good question. this year I've been... So there hasn't been only one time, but I have, what's the word I'm looking for? But I have volunteered myself, I guess.
Okay.
I'm working for another company in the winter doing snow plowing.
Okay.
I have done snow plowing a lot before. I do have a CDL license. So I did give him my time as far as snow goes for that. We've only had one storm so far. I don't think I myself want to get back into it as far as owning the equipment mm-hmm. and whatnot. I'm using his equipment, his accounts, and that works out for me. Our season, I've noticed, is getting longer. So I worked up until the end of December.
Okay.
And you know, before you know it, March.
Yep.
And then we'll get going again. So it's not like I have months and months of downtime.
Yeah.
And being basically a solo operator here, I take this time to kind of, you know, go through all the equipment, kind of revamp things. And I do I was just doing a fence install, a stockade fence. It's not my bread and butter. I don't do that. I wouldn't do that in the summertime, but I, you know, things like that I'll do in this time of the year, yeah, if the weather allows. But again, I kind of got into this so that I'd have, I used to work a lot. You know, I'd have 80 hour weeks before. So I got into this to not do that. So I enjoy the winter. I like bringing my son to school, and home when he gets home. So, yeah, I mean, obviously you got to be diligent and make sure you put a little nest egg away for that time. You're not making as much money. And I'm not sure where that goes. You know, as the years progress, they might do something. But, you know, some of the customers have little projects that they want me to do. I don't shut down, so to speak, or anything like that. But it is a good like, okay, you can take a breath now, you know, relax. Because before you know it, we'll be back at it again.
Yeah, definitely. I always tell clients too that as you kind of hinted on there, is I've mastered the art of the squirrel. Putting my nuts away for the winter, right? Making sure I know every year what I need to have in sort of disposable income to be able to pay bills and all that stuff throughout the winter months and get to that next season and be comfortable and not be sweating, you know, those things or worrying about unforeseen, you know, bills that pop up and stuff. It's like, it's okay, no problem, right? Just go with it and that. And it's something that you you start to be diligent about and learn and become second nature as seasons go by each and every year. And you'll worry less and less about that sort of stuff, you know, right now with the recession and, you know, the crazy things that are happening out there. It's still, you're comfortable still, right? You're like, okay. So yeah, that all just comes with experience, I think.
And I think it does. Yeah, right. Exactly. And I think I would get, you know, if anything, I'd get better at it, like you said, as time goes on. And and always in the back of my mind, I know that, like, I've never not had a job. So, you know, I'm not shy about working, you know, nothing. Hey, just because I work myself now, it doesn't mean that, like, need be, if I had to work a couple of months for someone else in the off season, it's not going to hurt my feelings or anything like that. I'm not going to be, you know, embarrassed. Or any of that stuff.
If push came to shove, then it's not, you do what you need to do. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, and, that was kind of the, actually, when I started really talking to family members and friends that, hey, this is where I'm going, this is the route I'm going, you know, that was like, they were all shocked. Like, you know, are you sure you're going to leave a real, you know, I was at my last job for 7 years. So they were, you really going to leave, you know, wow. You know, it's funny because people don't, instead of being like happy for you or like rooting you on, it's usually, I mean, they want the best for you, but it's usually, you sure you want to do this? Know, but I had to remind them, hey, like, worst case scenario, I go out of business and I go get another job. So I'm back where I started. Big deal, you know, as long as you don't take on, you know, huge amounts of debt and whatnot. I think it's, as long as you're willing to work, man, you know, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, absolutely. The only guarantee in life is that there's no guarantees in life.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. So having that cushion or that job, that secure, the quote unquote secure job that most people think of. And I know your background, you're Portuguese, like Paul, and I'm Portuguese as well. Yep. So that sort of mindset of, you know, having the good job and all that sort of stuff that you're kind of born and raised with and things as well can be difficult for like the older generation to kind of wrap their head around that you're going to leave that sort of thing. But it's like, there's no guarantee. Like, look at the climate that we're going through right now with companies and things like that and like mass layoffs and things that just happen regardless of how many years you've been at that company or like there's no guarantee that that is the secure route or the, you know, that sort of thing, right? The only guarantee is if you're working for yourself that you're going to do the best for yourself, that you're going to put it all out there, right? So I think owning your own business and building that is the smart route.
Right. I think it's Dave Ramsey who says, the job security, the only thing about job security is your ability. Your job doesn't provide security. Your ability to find another job provides security. Mm-hmm. So like You have to look at it like you're the job security, not where you work.
Yeah.
Your skill set and your ability to work, and that's where the job security comes from.
Yeah, awesome. So, what are your future plans and goals for your business?
I do think my goal is to, like I said, to try and get that right hand man, so to speak, or at least a second person. It is nice. I like it. It's fun to have that person riding around in the truck with you. Mm-hmm. But I basically kind of kind of keep the status of where we are right now and just build on, just keep getting better. I look back at the pictures from 2017 to now, and sometimes I like laugh at myself. That's just, geez, I can't believe I did that. Mm-hmm. I'm better at that now, but I want to just keep kind of refining that.
Yeah.
And maybe refining some of the customers. I have a great set of customers, set of clients. There are some that, are not as into their lawn as I am. So as new ones come on, you've talked about that before, I like where I am as far as volume. So I'd like to just make sure that they're all on the same level of type of client.
Okay,
So maybe pick up a couple more, drop off a couple, how that goes.
Yeah.
But no, just kind of keeping steady. I think slow and steady is going to work for me right mm-hmm. now. And just finding out where my niche is, I like all the aspects of it. I do like the plant work. I like bed maintenance. I do like all of it. I do have a passion for mowing. I really like mowing the lawns and making mm-hmm. those lawns look good. I know that's, that a lot of people will say you can't make money mowing lawns. So I guess I aim to prove them wrong at that.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's like me. I love the mowing side of it. If I mm-hmm. had to, choose a thing, well, if I had to choose, if I do choose, because that's what I do the majority of.
Right.
I do some hedge trimming. It's one of those things that, I don't mind it. I don't hate it. Mm-hmm. But I do it, and I do a good job. I always get compliments on, mm-hmm. the ones that I do the same ones over and over again throughout the year because they just love how it turns out. But bed maintenance, good Lord.
I don't mind it.
That's one of the things like for me is like, I'd rather be at the dentist.
Yeah. I'd switch that one. I'm not a huge dentist fan, I do like bed maintenance. It's about getting the right client that knows that this is going to take some time.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's without being like rude or anything, but that's, you're looking for the client that wants to pay for your time to be doing that bed maintenance, because doing it and having the rush, that's no fun,
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone likes doing it that way, but like, I want it to come out looking good. So it's going to take a little while. That's where the client really matters, the type of client that you have. In my years as an automotive tech, I mostly all of it was all on high-end companies. So I worked for BMW, I worked for Volkswagen. So they kind of, most of those customers kind of had an expectation already.
Yeah.
So, they push you. They push you to be a little bit better and a little bit, not that a lower brand wouldn't, but the majority of the customers come to want that expectation. So it's easier to say, okay, hey, it's going to cost a little bit more, or it's going to, we have to spend a little bit more time on it because they're looking for a certain outcome,
Yeah, absolutely. So if you were to start your lawn care business all over again, what is one thing that you would do differently?
Probably a lot of things. I don't know. I shouldn't say that. The one thing I would have done differently was done it sooner.
Oh, okay. That's a great answer.
Yeah. I probably knew, let's see, 4 or 5 years earlier that like, hey, I think I should do this. It's funny. I'll go back into social media and stuff and I see pictures of the first house we had, and I'd be out there and I'd take pictures of the lawn and stuff, and there'd be I would have commented on it or something, or someone was commenting on it. I'm like, wow, you should do this for a living. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like a tongue-in-cheek kind of laughing type of stuff. And then I started really getting into it myself, and it's like, I probably should have done this sooner, you know, mm-hmm. if anything. But
it's like that famous saying, like, when's the best time to plant an acorn? And the answer is 20 years ago. When's the second best time?
Right.
Today, because if you planted it 20 years ago, you'd already have the oak tree. So it's one of those things, right? It's that's a great answer. What is one thing that people don't realize about running a lawn care business?
That's a good one. I would say the expense. Especially what you see, we have a lot over here in Rhode Island and in New England of like these huge trailer setups, the huge trucks and all of that, you know, getting pulled around every day. I think the back end, the expense, I think some of the landscapers don't realize the expense. They just kind of go along with it, not mm-hmm. realizing, you know, and that's been my thing where I'm trying to balance that out versus, you know, how big do you get? Obviously there's those like happy mediums because once you start getting a few people, you know, your profit ratios go down dramatically. But I don't think, some of the customers don't realize what it takes nowadays to run any business, especially a business where, you know, you got to buy a truck. I mean, at the minimum, you know, it is a low entry level getting in, you know, you just start with anything, but at the minimum, you're buying equipment, you're buying a truck, you're probably buying a trailer, you know, where if you got like a software job or something like that, you probably already have a computer at home, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely an expense to it and, you know, insurance, all of the backside of it. So, cause I think Paul has talked about this before where the industry doesn't seem to want to grow in price wise. You know, you get a lot of the, well, like we talked about, that guy was charging me X amount of dollars. Yeah, well, you know, lawns were $30 to cut, you know, 20 years ago. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't know where that's going. I think what's happened with the economy is actually good for us in a sense that you can raise your prices now because people are expecting you to raise your prices. Without being, you know, don't gouge or anything like that. Sometimes I'll just explain to them, this is the cost of it, you know? And then when you think about it, it still might not be enough, you know, the cost of living on, is just so high.
I
think that's probably one thing that, it just goes across the board. You know, I mean, if you want to do anything or you want to purchase, like right now purchasing a house where we live, I think you've mentioned it before, houses are really expensive. Where you guys live. It's the same here. I mean, we're on our second house and we bought this 5 or 6 years ago and it would probably be out of reach for us now if we had to go buy it, you know? So I don't think it's about pricing yourself for what you need today. It's about like pricing yourself for where you want to be. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I think that's something that, again, it's like educating the customer. And I ran into this in the automotive industry where, you know, kind of, I hate the term grease monkey, but when I started working on diesels, it was the same way. Like I felt like people looked at me less than when I worked on like the higher end cars. Cause like, oh, you're just a grease monkey.
Yeah, yeah.
You kind of have to get away from that now, you know, it's not those days anymore. And I'd say even like if I tell somebody, I'm a landscaper, you know, I don't sit there and explain to them, come look at my Instagram and see the properties I do or see the quality of the work. You know, you don't get that opportunity to tell them that. So they immediately just kind of think it's a low level type of job. I think it's about like the whole industry bringing that up and educating the customer that way. Like, I'm running a business. I need to know accounting. I need to know maintenance. I need to know all of this stuff, you know? But definitely the cost and the knowledge that's required, you know?
Absolutely. It's funny you said that, like the whole, like those kind of derogatory terms that people use and kind of looks down on things. It's funny when I bought the franchise, when I first started out, and started out as like a franchised lawn care company, there was like a local college that had like a course you could take for like lawn mowing and gardening and stuff for employees, like landscape employees. And franchise company encouraged people and would say, like, you know, if you do the course, we'll pay for half of it and stuff, right? So I took them up on that. Sure, I'm going to do it, right? So the course was called the Your Residential Landscape Technician course. So I'm like, oh, that sounds good. I'm a residential landscape technician. That's
right.
Yeah. So but it puts it
there is something to that.
Yeah, so, yeah, pretty cool. So, down to the last two questions for you.
Sure.
So, this next one, again, is one of my favorite questions. And it's for you to share your best piece of advice with those just starting out in the business. But I want you to come at this from the point of view that the person that's asking you, somebody that you know, somebody that you like, maybe a family member or a family member's kid or something like that, or a neighbor or something like that, and they come up to you and you know, they say, hey Kevin, I'm thinking about starting a lawn care business. What's your best piece of advice for me? What would you tell them?
I would say, I mean, I would definitely you know, say go for it, but I would say if they hadn't, you know, haven't had any experience as far as going around, you know, day to day doing it, I would say go work for someone at least for a season, and just make sure you like it, because it is an investment.
Yep.
You know, you can always get out of it, obviously, but it is an investment, and just go work for someone. See if you like it. If it's something you like, you know, do whatever it takes.
To
get it done. That would be my advice. You know, I know it's, again, like we talked about, it's not popular. People just say, go work for a big corporation or something, and you know, put your time in and all that stuff. But no, I mean, if it's what you want, if I was telling my son this, I'd say the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know?
Awesome.
Go find someone that you see does the best work, sort of kind of like what happened with me.
Yeah.
Go see who you think is doing what the kind of quality of work that you want to do. Go get a job with them and, you know, see if you like it.
Yeah. All right, great answer. So last question for you. This one's an easy one. And that is, how can people follow you online?
Kami Darrison's Son on Instagram and Facebook, same thing.
Awesome. So thank you so much for taking the time out today and coming out to the show. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Thanks, Julio. That was great. Thanks. Nice to meet you, and thanks a lot.
Awesome. So there you have it, Lawn Care Nation. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that value-packed interview episode with Kevin Medeiros from K. Medeiros and Son. He provided a lot of value there in some of the lessons that he's already learned through his years here of getting into the lawn care industry. And I'll leave some links in the podcast show notes where you can follow him online there. So that's it for this one, guys. Here's to wishing you guys all overwhelming success and freedom in your lawn care business. Bye for now.